It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 549. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. The show is brought to you in part by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on-demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com. And don't forget to use the promo code MikeTechShow. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. And we have three voicemails tonight that we're going to get to in a few minutes. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow, and also facebook.com/miketechshow. Have jam-packed show, have a great story from the trenches that you will enjoy, and all of the lessons learned from my work last Friday. So I'm going to talk about that. Then going to get to the voicemails and a stack of email, all kinds of topics for tonight. Before we get started, I want to make sure, remind everybody that if you are a tech, Corey from Instant House Call and a lot of other great folks are hosting a live, no-pitch, online IT business show. It's Jetpack, and it's the business show for all IT pros. Online, watch the live show free, and it's every Monday for 4 weeks starting June 29th. At 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time. It's hosted by the tech podcaster Jeff from Podnuts. So make sure you plan on attending June 29th and for the next 4 weeks, Jetpack. You definitely want to check this out, and you can register for the event by clicking on the link on my website. It'll be in the show notes. You're going to enjoy it. Also, want to remind everybody, ChannelCon in Chicago, if you haven't signed up and got your free pass, that free pass is courtesy of Instant House Call. The link's in the show notes, and you can attend the event. We have a podcaster meetup on Sunday, August 2nd in Chicago, and that is from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Chicago time. If you're going to the event, make sure you're attending that, and please let me know. Email me if you're heading to the event and you're a Mike Tech Show or Tech Vets listener. Any kind of special events or anything that's changing, I can let you know before the meetup. Last Friday, I had a new client that I had met once and had two new systems that he purchased and a new color laser printer, and we were going to make some changes to the printer setups and layout and how he was scanning. And when I met with him, very knowledgeable about his environment, at least that's how it was presented. And he told me what we needed to do. It had been a long time since he had updated anything. So the systems were in working order, but older. He had a server that was at his desk that was Small Business Server 2003. His email wasn't hosted there anymore, and it's now hosted in the cloud, and not real happy with his email provider there. We talked about it, and I said, well, let's get the new systems in place. He only had some files on the server that we were going to migrate to a NAS device, so I had the Synology NAS, and the plan was to put the new computers in and get them, eliminate the server, set up the Synology, and then tackle email in a couple weeks and do an email migration to a hosted Exchange environment. That was the plan. Well, when I got there, I realized that after backing up his two systems, so I started backing them up with FADS Auto Backup 6 Pro, I'm backing them up, and when that's done, I always like to do a reality check for Outlook. So I open up Outlook on his daughter, who's his assistant, out in the front office. I look at her Exchange settings, and I see an Exchange connector. Now, why would there be an Exchange connector if he's not getting email on Exchange and it's hosted somewhere else? This is where, when you're communicating and the appearance, he believed his email was hosted off-site. When I dug deeper, we find that the email is going through the hosted provider just for the scanning of the messages, because he had a spam problem where he was blacklisted and his domain was kind of shut down for being able to accept emails from him. And he hired the company that hosts his website that would then cleanse the mail before it came into the small business server for Exchange. Now, right off the bat, anybody listening who supports small business server knows that we can configure the server and lock it down so it's not an open relay for spamming. And there are specific things you can do, but you got to understand Exchange server and you have to understand the configurations. But he did not have to go to an off-site scanning of email and then coming in. But I understand to get up and running and to have his email again, that was probably the fastest and easiest solution. But his email still comes to the Exchange server. If I'm removing that server and I'm removing that domain, how's he going to get his email? I can't just hook up the new computers. And we talked about this. We had two options. He stays connected until we migrate the mail and then hook up the new systems, but he really wanted to go to those new computers on Friday. Well, the other option is to immediately embark upon an email migration. So, one of my other notes was, do you have access to your domain and complete control of your domain? The answers were, yes, I do. Yes, I have control. Yes. Well, you can imagine when we go looking to try to make to see that I had access to the DNS, he has no access. I call the company that's hosting his email. They can't allow me to make the changes for DNS. Now, I'm not even ready to, because I got to set up his account at SureWeb, create the two accounts, get the servers for where the MX records are going to be, and then make the change to DNS. We have no control over his domain. I ask him, how fast can we make the changes if I tell you? And he says, well, that's not happening today, because the tech, the only human being for that company, is heading home, picking up his luggage, and then going to vacation for the weekend and won't be back till Monday. And he's the only person. I said, what if he dies? How are you going to ever make changes to your clients? Well, we'll figure it out somehow. I'm like, what do you mean? I said, we need to make these changes probably over the next hour. And he says, well, you got 15 minutes. So enter SureWeb. I call and get tech support right away. And we have to set up the domain, get the MX records and the Auto Discover record in 15 minutes. I have to email the guy because he's now calling this tech to tell him when he gets home to check his email. And if there's an email there from me, to make those DNS changes, and then he can go. But if the email's not there by the time he's leaving his house, it's not going to happen. So I want the MX records before we even create everything. So they give me the A record for Auto Discover that has to be set in the DNS. They give me the two MX records. I quickly compile an email to this tech. I send the email, and now we go forth and we're creating the accounts. We go through and set up the domain on SureWeb for Exchange Hosted 2013. That gets done, and that takes a half hour. I hear back from the tech. He made the changes. I go to MX Toolbox, which is our go-to website, and we're going to get to that from an email later to in the podcast. I go there, and the MX records were already showing up for SureWeb. So I would say in about a half hour, I get this all set up, and I'm testing, and so new email is going to the Exchange Hosted services. Perfect. So now I got to export his email from the Exchange server. This is another lesson for everybody. Waiting to hear this. And I'm going back there Saturday to finish this. His daughter has very little email, maybe a gig, easily able to export it from the Outlook 2003 client. Now I go to the owner's email and I export it and it finishes. I get no message. It's about 1.9 gig. And I was like, oh, that's okay. That's not bad. You know, pretty good. And I export, you know, get that PST. Then I import everything. I set up the Outlook because on his new system, he has Office 2013. And I have Outlook 2013. And I easily set that up to SureWeb for his Exchange Hosted. I import the mail. I notice he had some PSTs for archives. No problem. I just copy them over. So things are looking pretty good. We had the little bump. You know, we had to do an email migration that we didn't plan for. Well, he's looking at his email, and a lot of it's missing. A lot of it's not there. And then it dawns on me. Outlook 2003 has a 2 gig PST size limit. I look at the information store and it's 8 gig. So clearly, how do I get 8 gig out of that Exchange server? And the Exchange experts out there, you say, well, there's EXMerge, but you got the same problem. There's a 2 gig limit when you use the EXMerge utility. So here's the problem I'm faced with for this Saturday, and I'm going to tell you what my solution is. It's a laptop that he has married to that domain. Now that server's off. He was okay with not having access to some of that mail during the week. I now have to take the old server. I'm bringing a switch with me that on a private network that's not connected to the internet because I don't want any new email coming in. I am connecting his laptop to the domain to that small business server 2003 server. I'm going to put Outlook 2007, which does not have that limitation. I'm going to connect it to the Exchange server, then see that all of his emails there, do an export to a PST, copy the PST to a USB, take it over to his system and import it into his Exchange hosted system on Outlook 2013 on his new desktop. Hope everybody followed me. So I'm going to create this private network. I'm going to hook it all up, use Outlook 2007 to extract the email because at 2007, they broke the 2 gig limit barrier for PSTs. Let's keep going, and then I'm going to sum up all the lessons. There is a copier that I found out the hard way only has a Windows 7 driver for printing. We can't scan. That's okay because that copier was never hooked to the network before, so at least they can print to it. Now we have the Xerox Color Laser, an old LaserJet 4, a 4L that's networked and still working and going strong, so no problem there. I now go to hook up the printer that upon my interview on my first meeting, he said was connected via USB to his laptop. Well, guess what? It was connected via a parallel port to the small business server, which is now retired. And there's no other interfaces on this old HP LaserJet. Now I'm putting my foot down and I said, see this printer? We're throwing it away and you are getting a HP LaserJet that we can hook via USB to your new system because he needs a printer right at his desk. So I send him to Staples while we're still working. I said, go buy this printer, give him a model. I said, we need a long USB cable, and away he goes to get that. I run into QuickBooks 2006. Guess what? QuickBooks 2006 will not work on Windows 7. This is a new system that's Windows 7 Pro 64-bit. You're saying, Mike, why would you release a new system that's Windows 7 Pro 64-bit? It's because I intend on taking him directly to Windows 10 and forego the pain and suffering of Windows 8.1. It's a call that I made after talking to him, and I didn't feel that we could get everything going the way I wanted to with Windows 8 right there. And that's interesting because we're going to talk about Windows 10 later on. So now I got the new printer hooked up via USB, but QuickBooks 2006, I said, you have to upgrade. So he's going to use his old laptop for now until he decides to upgrade. But something I found out from a QuickBooks expert that I know, that's my bookkeeper, he opened up a ticket, and I like using him for QuickBooks problems because he can open up the ticket, and he has free access to tech support. And he got back to me and said, Mike, you can do an upgrade, an in-place upgrade of the data. You can have QuickBooks 2015, and we can import the data, and it will convert it. It just takes a long time. So now I have QuickBooks. He has another program that is a program for his market. I'm not going to get into the program, but let's just say he has version 6, came off of support, did some research on this while I was there, in 2007. They now have a version 7 that they even no longer support. They're at version 8. So he has to keep his laptop running these two programs, and he's still got XP on that laptop until he decides to pay the money to do the upgrades for that software. Here's the lessons. No matter what your client tells you, you have to perform the discovery yourself. You cannot rely on the information that you're being given. You have to see it for yourself. I know this, yet I still fell into the same trap. I should have sat at every system and ran my SIW utility and gathered a recon. I need to look at the back of every printer. I should have sat at that server and I would have seen that it's live and Exchange is still working. I did not sit at that server. I should have done that. I will never make this mistake again. Anytime I'm doing something, we're going to spend the time to do the proper discovery because all these things could have been addressed. Everything's fine and he's happy. As a matter of fact, I touched base. This is Friday. I touched base on Monday and everything was great. He's happy, happy. So the only thing he doesn't have is his old email, and I'm going to get that for him this Saturday. I had no time to hook up the guest Wi-Fi because as it was starting to run late, I got there at 9 a.m. and it's now almost 9 at night, 12 hours with my son and I. And this is all billable. Now, we took out time for lunch and other, you know, I minus some time where it was appropriate. But this whole day was billable for my son and I. And he understood because there was a lot of challenges that I met with that I said, you know, this wouldn't have happened, you know, had I been ready. Now, since the email migration went so well, I said, you actually saved money because it probably would have taken longer to doing all the prep and all the things. I said, now we were just kind of forced into it and made it happen. So all in all, at the end, it was good. You need to do an assessment and you got to see it for yourself. You got to touch it, feel it, smell it, have it in your hands. And then I would have put a proper project plan together for the entire migration. Lesson 2. When it comes to the domain, no matter what your client says, take a look at where the domain was purchased. Now, I seen it was Network Solutions, but who knew that it wasn't for him the network solutions. It's network solutions held by someone else. I asked this person, and I run into this a lot. They have multiple clients that they keep under one account all the domains. That's wrong. I understand, and I see a lot of my peers, IT consultants, and people like me that do this. I refuse to do this. I will never hold a domain for one of my clients. I go to GoDaddy and we create the account, transfer the domain, and it's under their name, their email, their control. I said, give me the password so I can help you manage it, but you own it. And I won't let any website developer take ownership of the name servers. You can't do it. You have to have control. You have to have your clients own the domain. You've heard the stories. All of the pain, any pain there's been in an email migration, it comes down to couldn't have control of the domain. And one of my things, I will never enter into a migration until I prove it. So I broke my own rules here. One, I sort of didn't because I figured the email migration was going to be in a few weeks. And then I would vet all these things and do my due diligence. And I would have discovered that we didn't own the domain and that we would have had, there was a waiting period. And I would have to coordinate it with this person, you know, their tech. So everything just sort of forced into it. And I was very, very lucky that at the end of the day, everything's great. So going to be back there Saturday. I'll let you know how I make out. Well, speaking of this, next Thursday night, no show. Next week, no Mike Tech show. I will be working for a client that today we literally scheduled Thursday night because it's the only time that the two of us are available next week. And there's some work that I have to get done. The following Thursday, July 2nd, will be the next show after tonight. Let's get to some voicemails. First one from Bradley.
Yes, Mike. I was listening to show 545. I'm a little bit behind. When you're talking about getting into the machines that had no domain and you needed to get a user account, I use MS Dark Disk, and that allows me to go in and enable or disable accounts, change passwords. I don't know if you tried it or not, or that would have helped you with what you're doing, but look at it, give it a try, and see what you think. Thanks, bye.
MS Dart. I am not familiar with that, so I'm going to look that up and take a look at that. Bradley, thank you very much for that. Here is next voicemail.
Hi, Mike. Al here from the Abn Abn podcast. Just wanted to drop you a line. I've come across the same issue you were having with annoying pop-up, with the Windows saying this computer is not running genuine Windows. Found if you went to the Microsoft Windows Genuine website, you can run a test to see if your Windows install is genuine. But this reports that the Windows is not genuine. But if you went to the computer properties, it shows you that Windows was activated. It was annoying to fix. It does not always show the pop-up on every boot. So I removed the dodgy update, which was causing the pop-up window, and tried to install the patch to fix it, but it would not install. When I went to Windows Update was not running as well. It looked like Windows Update was broken, just came up with a warning message when you click check for updates. I think this is the same issue you were having. So I ran the Windows Update troubleshooter from the Microsoft website, which said it fixed a load of issues, but this did not help. So I checked the log file in C, in the Windows directory. There's a file there called windowsupdate.log, which shows you a good lot of information which is happening with the Windows Update, and reporting it was failing to initialize data store. So I found some blogs which told you to delete some folders in the Windows directory, software distribution folders, a number of folders you had to delete in there. Still no joy, but after about an hour of Googling, I was just about to give up. I came across a forum post about if you've cloned the hard drive to a bigger hard drive, it breaks Windows Update, which I thought, this is a bit odd, worth giving it a try, but which I've actually done about 3 months ago. It had a failing drive, so I cloned it from a 150 gig drive to a 500 gig drive. The forum post said, you may get the same error in Windows Update log, which I was getting, and you need to install this Intel driver for high density drivers. Boom, install the driver, rebooted the laptop and Windows Update started working again. And saw all the updates and the pop-up window had not come again since. And if you went in to is my Windows Generating website, it says Windows is generating. So, yeah, hope that might help someone out there. But I'll put a link in the show notes to is my Windows Generating website, which you can go to. But you have to be running Windows 7. If you're running Windows 8, it doesn't seem to work. It detects what OS you're running. The Windows Update Troubleshooter and the link to the forum post on the Intel high-density driver. Also, regarding what to do about updating computers using Windows Update, we have a set of little Windows 2012 R2 server at work, which is also a domain controller and runs a Microsoft WS US server, which copies all the updates from the MS website, MS Windows Update, to a local version on the server called WSUS, which is short for Windows Server Update Services, which can be used in a domain to download updates once and then push out to all the workstations once they have been approved. As we also have laptops come into the office that need to be updated but are never put onto the Windows domain, I have a script which manually points to laptops to use the WSUS server and not the MS Windows Update server on the internet. When we fully update the laptop by this means, it basically just goes to that WS server, pulls the updates down, and does it pulls it over the local area network and not from the internet. Once that's all been run, you just run another script to remove the WSUS settings and point the laptop back to use the Microsoft Windows Update on the web. I'll talk about this more in detail and how I configured it in episode 17 of the Admin podcast. Again, I'll give you a link in the show notes. Anyway, keep up the good work. As always, when a new episode of your podcast comes available, it gets jumped to top of my list.
Thank you. And I will link his podcast where he explains how to do that with WSUS and the scripts. But I'm really more fascinated with the Intel HD driver that's needed because I cloned a system. I cloned a drive. Very interesting that was exactly what my problem was with the client, that I had to just totally redo the system and now everything's better. But I cloned that hard drive. And then soon after the clone, we had this pop up. And now I'm armed, and again, I'm going to have a link to that driver, so if anybody runs into that problem, you're going to be able to fix it. I would have never thought of that. Thank you so much for that. Voicemail from Winston Wolf about drivers for Windows 10. Give a listen.
Hey, Mike, Winston Wolf, with a bit of a follow-up from your last podcast in reference to installing Windows 10 on your current machine. So the Windows 10 driver module is exactly the same as the Windows 8.1 driver module. So if your motherboard and hardware providers have drivers for Windows 8.1, then you can use those very same drivers in Windows 10, no problems. As long as they're signed by Microsoft, which most of them are, you'll have no problem installing the drivers. What Microsoft has done is they have taken the core from Windows 8 and 8.1 and enhanced it in a number of ways, and they've fixed the UI problems that we've had as users in order to appeal to the enterprise customers. The driver module, the underlying structure, is still the same. So you're able to take those Windows 8.1 drivers, install them on Windows 10. They work great. I've tested with a number of pieces of hardware in my lab. They've all worked perfectly. And so far, knock on wood, I haven't had any issues. I will be moving the bulk of my operations to Windows 10 as soon as possible because the operating user interface is significantly easier for the end user to go to if they're already used to Windows 7. So hope that helps, and thanks for the great show.
Thanks, Winston. And he called me yesterday on my cell phone, and he said, Mike, I was hoping you wouldn't answer so I could leave a voicemail for the show. So I said, okay, look, call me back and I won't answer. Leave the voicemail and then I'll hook up my iPhone to the mixer and record it in Audacity, and then play it on the show tonight. Interesting, and I guess that makes sense. If Windows 10's core obviously is based on Windows 8.1 and the drivers work for 8.1, they're going to work for 10. So here's what I'm going to do for my main system. I'm going to do a complete image backup of my main C drive on my system. If you've been following the show, it's a 512 gig Samsung SSD. I'm going to have an image of that, and I'm Windows 7 Ultimate 64-bit. Now that I got the image, and I already know I can recover because I've done it, that's going to be put aside. Matter of fact, I can put that right on my NAS. Now I'm going to raid my two 512s as a terabyte RAID 0 Samsung hard drive and install Windows 10 from scratch and see how everything is. And if everything's fine and I can record a podcast, I'll do a test show, make sure the mixer's working, make sure I can print, then I'll probably stay Windows 10. Between now and then, I'm going to make sure there's at least 8.1 drivers for everything for my motherboard. That's my biggest thing. The motherboard's a couple years old, and if I find that I'm going to have a tough time with maybe the motherboard drivers, then that's really my gotcha. And that's what everybody has to do before you go to Windows 10. If you're on Windows 7, make sure you at least have some Windows 8.1 drivers so you're not going to be in trouble. And then have them all downloaded so when you're ready to do 10, you can try those drivers. But have an image of your system so this way you at least have a backup plan before you go forward. That's the key to any project. I don't gamble, but when I do, boy, I'm going to win because that means it's rigged. It's fixed. I create only win-win scenarios. And I take that same approach to my clients and to work and to projects. You make sure you have a backup plan that you know if it all goes wrong, we can do this. And sometimes you have to test it. And that's my experience from the corporate world. We would do change control documents and we would test and we would make sure that we can put everything back the way it was before we started. Make sure you have a plan in place, and then everything's great. You're not going to sweat it. If it doesn't work, don't worry. You implement the backup plan. We got lots of email. So we have a couple from Austin here. Here's the first one. And this is regarding converting the drive from GPT to MBR. That was a question from a listener. In show 547, I had sent a voicemail asking how to convert a GPT drive to MBR, and it's very, very easy, but remember, this will wipe your drive. Well, I know how to do that from computer management, actually. And I was thinking, is there a way to do this and not delete the data? I guess that's where I might have been overthinking this. But if you're going to back up the data and change it, then this is what you do, and you could do this from the command prompt. Open the command prompt as an admin. And then type disk part. Then type disk part list disk. Now remember the disk number that the disk part gave you for the drive that you want to convert. And you can determine this by seeing the size of the drive. So let's say the number of my drive is 2. Then type disk part select disk 2. Now type clean. The above command will wipe your drive clean, including the partition table. Now type disk part convert GPT or MBR, depending on what you want to convert your drive to. Now type disk part create partition primary FS for file system equals NTFS. Wait till your drive formats. Go to control panel. Administrative Tools, Computer Management, Storage, and Disk Manager finds the partition that you just created and add a drive letter to it. That's it. That's the instructions from going from GPT to MBR. Thank you, Austin. This is regarding making an updates depot. I use Windows Updates Downloader. You can get all Windows updates right from Windows 2000 to Windows 10. You can get the server updates. The only problem with this solution is it depends on an update list, and the author updates the update list very late. But you can download the setup file, and he has a link. And after installing the program, just open and close it, and then you need to download the update list for the edition of Windows you want updates for. And he has another link. After downloading the update list, just import it into the program. For this, open the URL file and import it. Open the, excuse me, the .uls file and import it. Do this with all the ULs files that you downloaded. Then open the program, select all the import and optional updates, and download them. Also, if you want to have a batch file that will install all of the MSU files after downloading, the only thing you need to do is put the MSU files in one folder and put the batch folder in the folder and run it and install the updates one by one in order, which they must be installed and will reboot your system automatically after all the updates are installed. It doesn't work with .exe or cab files. I know this is complicated. I will put the links from this email into the show notes, and hopefully the instructions there will make sense. This is from Michael. Big fan of your show. You had a big impact on my decision to quit my job and become a freelancer, so thank you for all your work. Regarding your move from single drive to RAID 0, most likely the reason why your clone didn't work correctly was because lack of RAID drivers. I have heard that people had luck doing backup image of original driver and restoring it to a RAID 0, a Kronos Universal Restore. You will need to have RAID drivers for your motherboard handy. This video should give you a preview of the process. So thank you. I appreciate that. Number two, regarding Windows updates. I have used Windows images released by a guy called Murphy7B. He is a reputable member of My Digital Life Forum. If you want to do all the work yourself, he made a tutorial on how to integrate Windows updates to an ISO. Have been using his images for a while, and the only downside is that you can't use them for Windows in-place upgrade and repair. Well, that's okay. I only care about a fresh install. He is releasing all-in-one ISOs monthly, and they do work with retail and OEM keys. Only on the occasion had to call MS for the activation line. He has a link to the tutorial and to where to get these ISOs, so I'm going to put them in the show notes. I'm going to try one on a test machine, download one of his ISOs, reinstall it, Windows, and see how it goes, because I would so like to be able to do an install and have all the updates built into that ISO. That's the dream for reinstalling Windows 7. This is from BC. I'm going to comment on three different subjects. First one, Windows 10 is not free. Man, when I mentioned that Windows 10 is free, boy, this really sparks something in a lot of you, and I love it. So here we go. Windows 10 is not free because you have to wipe an existing system on which you have invested the cost of the OS plus time installing, configuring, and perfecting over the last few years. I want to keep old systems running as spares and fall back when testing new OSs, apps, gadgets, etc. Why keep old systems running? For example, I still have an XP system performing essential duties for which Windows 7 Pro is incapable. It has to do with the way Sandbox IE handles DRM audiobooks and ActiveX controls inside the sandbox protection on XP that will not work on Windows 7. Yes, it is still getting critical updates. Number two, Win 10 Pro manufacturers suggested retail price. Some say 200, some say 150. Big retail money for an OS that locks out future use of Linux. And he has some links here. And of course, all these links will be in the show notes. And then UEFI Linux killer. Unless open source Debian, Ubuntu, Mint, etc., make some sort of agreement with Microsoft or system board manufacturers and share UEFI secure boot key, old MS OS used motherboards may be locked out of a Linux afterlife. So very interesting, and I will have all these links for you. This is from Bradley, and he was asking on one of my shows, he thinks it was 454, thanks for all you do, you mentioned ASUS routers. I am looking for a router that is fully configurable, and I can put in my own DDNS servers, like OpenDNS. A lot don't. I believe you also said they use a supported version of WRT. Please let me know which router you suggest for home use. Bradley, I have a list of ASUS routers that was given to me by listeners that I listed in a past show that I think had a phenomenal amount of links. I'm going to copy and paste those and email them to you. Thanks for the email. This is from BC again. This is STUCC search. I don't know if you search for parts and bargains, but I accidentally found this tool called STUCCU, which drills down into dozens of retail sites and finds products or computer parts, almost anything for sale on the net. You can use it to compare prices or just search Amazon as you prefer. It aggregates all those little vendor links in each product page, usually with photos. And this is Will. Will, thank you so much. And I'm going to have a link to that parts search site like that. Thank you. Larry, I know you buy a lot of stuff off of Dell. If you spend $700, they are offering a new 32-inch TV. Wow. I should have 20 TVs from that one project. If you don't need the TV, it would be a nice giveaway on the show. I'm going to have the Dell link. Unfortunately, I think the way I buy from Dell Prime from my distributor, I probably don't qualify for that like it is for retail, but I'll have the link up there. Hey, if you're going to buy a Dell Optiplex or any Dell and you're going to spend $700, might as well get something for it. You know, get a 32-inch TV. Nice. Thank you. I received an email from someone who has a problem with their client where the domain is being blacklisted for email. The way to look at this is go to MX Toolbox. You hear me talk about it all the time. I mentioned it in the beginning of the show. It's how I check the MX records for any domain. Put the domain name in question in mxtoolbox.com. When it comes up, you'll have a link for blacklisted sites for each of the MX records. Click on that, and you're going to get a list of all of the possible places where you can be blacklisted for the domain. Check out which ones you're on the list. Click on that link and follow through to figure out how to be delisted and removed. That's the key. So it all starts with MX Toolbox, the blacklist list, and then you follow the instructions from there. Final email from Chris. He's letting me know that the RSS link is broke at the top corner of MikeNation.net website. So, Chris, thank you. I'm going to investigate that this weekend, try to fix it if I didn't realize. And, you know, the only way I'm going to learn that there is a problem with my website or the feed or the audio or anything, you got to let me know, please. Let me know so I can fix it. It's the only way I find out. That is it. If you buy from Amazon or know anybody that buys from Amazon, use my link. I'll get a commission. It helps support the show. The link is amazon.mikenation.net. Your price stays the same. And I also have a nice Amazon link on the left-hand side of my website and in the show notes of every show. There's a link for Amazon. You begin there, click on that, and then everywhere you go on Amazon, anything you add to your cart or purchase, after that initial entry, I'll get a commission on that. Thank you so much for supporting the show, and I really appreciate it. It makes a big difference. It helps. Thank you so much. I want to thank everybody for downloading and staying subscribed. Remember, support Instant House Call at instanthousecall.com. When you download the trial version for 15 days, use the promo code MikeTechShow. Also, Fabs Auto Backup for Tech 6 Pro. Used it twice yesterday, two different clients for migrating. Used it last Friday to migrate the two systems I talked about for the new client. I use it almost every day. That is the best program to transfer your settings. That's it. Next week, no show. I'll be back July 2nd for the next live show. Have a great weekend, great 2 weeks. Be safe. Stay cool. Talk to you then. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.